This is episode 92 of IDRA Class Notes.
I think there are various ways that we've begun to use data more and to encourage our chapters to use data. That's one thing about PPS is that we really encourage parents to understand what's going on in school districts at a very deep level. And there's no way that they can really understand how the school is serving children unless they can read and interpret that data.
Hi, this is Aurelio Montemayor at IDRA, the Intercultural Development Research Association, returning with one of our great podcasts. Remember to visit our website and to sign up for our podcasts. Today we're going to be talking to a very special person. She is Ann Foster, the Chief Executive for Parents for Public Schools, PPS. She is speaking to us from Jackson, Mississippi. This wonderful lady has been a board member in Texas, done a lot of work with public education, was with a group called Raise Your Hand in Texas, and then several years ago took over the reins at Parents for Public Schools, which I thought was a very wise decision. I personally have been on the National Board of PPS, for full disclosure, currently serving on their advisory board. And my organization, IDRA and PPS, have a lot of things in common. That's one of the reasons we wanted to have this conversation. Our theme for this month for IDRA in our publications is actionable knowledge. It is a major lever of change for schools, the actual data. And so that's one of the reasons we wanted to talk to Anne. Not only that, but what she brings to education and to education advocacy. So hello, Anne. How are you?
Hello. Good morning.
Tell us, why does Parents for Public Schools exist?
Parents for Public Schools exists to engage parents as well as others in the community to support public education at a very high level, to really understand why public education is essential in our communities, as well as our nation, as well as our democracy, and to learn what actionable items, as you said, can be done to make sure that we sustain public education as the fabric of our society. PPS exists to encourage parents to understand that they truly own the public education system, and they are really the ones who have to make sure that it works.
You know, I've always thought of organizations as having a particular piece or niche that they fit within the bigger picture. What do you say PPS's niche is?
Well, first of all, PPS is the only national organization that I know of that was actually started to recruit parents and encourage parents to fully support public schools with their children, with their interest, with their knowledge, and with their work. And, you know, PPS started in Jackson, Mississippi in 1989 as a way to encourage all parents in the community to work together for quality public education for all kids. And that was a really noble experiment at that time in the Deep South. That experiment included Dick Maupas and other Mississippians who really wanted to see Mississippi go forward in the arena of public education and have the support of all parts of the community. From there, others noticed the movement and wanted such a group in their own communities, and that's how we became national in 1991 and began to get chapters all over the country. Today, we have 17 chapters in 12 states with the interest of other groups coming forward soon.
And just as a side question on this, if a group wants to form, how would they go about connecting with you around these issues?
They would need to contact us and just have a conversation about the reason they'd like to consider starting a PPS chapter. We have an application process that involves some work on their part to help us understand what their goals are, why they want to become part of the national organization, and what the local issues are and the demographics of their school district and community. Because our chapters are very, very local. They all do some similar things with public education advocacy and parents, but they very much tailor their activities, their projects, and their work on the local issues in their own community. And so what our chapter in San Francisco does may be very different from what Syracuse does on the other side of the country.
Right. One of the things that I experienced in my connections with the different groups around the country in Parents for Public Schools is how much information most of these people have at their fingertips about their school districts. And we recently came out with a publication that is centered around our Quality Schools Action Framework. In the diagram, a major piece are the levers of change, and at the center of that is actionable knowledge by engaged citizens, by accountable leadership, and enlightened public policy. What you were saying about the local groups acting in a unique way to their local situation, how does data and actionable knowledge play into that?
I think there are various ways that we've begun to use data more and to encourage our chapters to use data. We have chapters right now who are really looking at their middle schools, for example, and they look at the data to see how those schools are performing. And that's one thing about PPS is that we really encourage parents to understand what's going on in school districts at a very deep level. And as you know, there's no way that they can really understand how the school is serving children unless they can read and interpret that data. So we encourage the use of data. We also have one of the tools for training parents is called the Parent Leadership Institute. We refer to it as the PLI. It actually is a product of the Center for Parent Leadership of the Pritchard Committee in Kentucky, which has been instrumental in raising the bar in Kentucky over the last decade. We use the Parent Leadership Institute in a statewide program here in Mississippi called Schoolhouse to Statehouse. We're now doing 5 Parent Leadership Institutes a year in the state of Mississippi. In addition, the Jackson chapter of Parents for Public Schools offers the Parent Leadership Institute each fall in Jackson. This is one of the key pieces of the Leadership Institute, is to pull out the data and to actually teach parents how to read and interpret the data. And this process is not something anyone has ever taught them to do before. We bring together 30 parents for the Institute. They have 6 days over 3 months of very intensive training about how school districts work, how school boards govern, or at least how they are supposed to govern, and how to read and interpret the data of their schools. And at the end of the Institute and the end of the day, these parents really have the lights go on because they can suddenly see that perhaps in their school, third grade African-American boys are not reading at an acceptable level at all. And that helps them understand where improvement is needed, and we encourage them to connect to help provide that improvement through a school project that will go for 2 years after the Institute. It may well connect to math or science scores, literacy, dropout rates, but it must link to data, it must link to student achievement, and it must involve other parents.
You know, I've known that you have a very dynamic process going in Mississippi, and you have partnerships that allow for the leadership to evolve from the community. What have been some of the kinds of data that the parents discover that really help them have a plan to change the school, to improve the school? What are the key pieces of data, for example, in some of the schools mm-hmm. in Mississippi they've been looking at?
Well, I think that what they learn, first of all, is that the data is broken down into the subgroups, the demographic subpopulations, and they can sort out the fact that the school may be serving some students acceptably or even in an exemplary fashion, but others they're not serving yet because those kids are not where they need to be on that test. I think seeing that is the first real clue to them about how to use the data. I think from there they can look at how economically disadvantaged students are faring compared to those who are not in that category. They can look at the entire school as all students, and they can compare that to other schools in the district to make sure that that school district is working in an equitable way with all schools within the district. And then, of course, they can refer to the data to see how their school and their school district is competing with others, not only in the state, but in the nation, how they're comparing.
That's excellent. Do they also look at, for example, gifted and talented at secondary level college prep courses or dual credit? Do they look at some of that information also?
Yes, we're looking at that more and more and trying to bring parents in from every level of the school district, K through 12. So we are looking more at middle schools, we're looking at high schools, we're trying to see whether the graduation data is going in the right direction. So all of these things, I think, depend on the data.
What are some actual successes that some of these parent groups have had, at least say in your state in Mississippi, through their understanding of school data?
We had a parent in Tupelo, Mississippi, who studied the data from her children's elementary school and found that science scores had dropped significantly. And what she and some other parents did was they raised some funds and actually created a science lab in that school for children to have that resource to go with their science curriculum. And we're studying that data. We hope to see that that science lab has helped to raise the scores in that school. We had a parent in the Mississippi Delta, which is one of the most challenged regions, not only of the state of Mississippi, but of the nation. She studied the dropout data. She looked at how many students were not going to graduate that year in her high school. And she actually created a project where she went in and assisted the counselors. She worked one-on-one with the kids who were not in a position to graduate. She helped figure out what the problem was, helped them get what they needed, helped them study for tests, helped them complete courses.
Wow.
And at the end of that project, I think all of them except for one walked across the stage. So these are very hands-on, real-life
yes.
action that comes about as the result of parents studying and understanding data.
That's critical because one of the problems in family leadership and education is connecting the dots between family leaders and children's academic improvement. These stories, I think, bring it to life. And parents don't have to have a lot of education. They just need to care and love their kids
yes.
and want to do something about it. What have you seen in this leadership work as been some of your greatest challenges?
There are many challenges, as you well know, in the arena of parent engagement. There are many disenfranchised parents who are not well connected with their children's schools. They are intimidated by the school, by educators, by speaking with educators. They are parents who may well have not had good experiences themselves in school or even graduated from high school. They're not in a good position to connect with their children's education in a positive way. So one of the challenges is finding and bringing those parents to the table and helping them move along the spectrum. We know that parents exist along a spectrum. We know that at one end of the spectrum, there are parents who would never consider not being engaged, parents who are going to make sure that schools serve their kids. If they don't serve their kids, they'll move their kids somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
They'll create their options because they're going to make sure their children get a good education. At the opposite end are parents, as I described a moment ago, who are completely disenfranchised and don't have the big picture. And there are others who exist somewhere between those two extremes. So what we're always trying to do is move the parents along that spectrum to a higher place. Some of the parents we work with actually get it to the point that they run for their own local school board.
That's
and
great.
They get heavily involved. So the challenge is just to bring the parents from where they are to a higher place along the spectrum. In addition to that, it's a challenge today to connect with parents who actually might want to start and sustain a Parents for Public Schools chapter in their community. We know that parents are busy. We know that in the current economy, many of them are trying to survive. They're looking for work. They're working multiple jobs. And so to have time to actually create an organization and run it and sustain it is a challenge. But it's something we work to do. We work to identify parents who want to do this work. And I would say final challenge is just the funding, is that chapters need to find funding within their local communities. Our organization has to continually look for funding in dismal economic times so that we can continue this crucial work.
Exactly. IDRA, also as a nonprofit, has very similar challenges. And I want to thank you very much for this participation. We're going to put your website online, parents4publicschools.org. Thank you very much, Anne. This was a wonderful interview.
Thank you, Aurelio. I appreciate being with you today.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org.